This is Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence, your 8:03 tee time every Sunday morning right here on ESPN 92.5 and 1300 AM. Let's join your host, Matthew Lawrence, for Backspin Golf.
Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to Backspin Golf on this glorious day. I hope it's nice wherever you are. It's a perfect golf day here in central Kentucky. And so what better way to start than to speak with my friend, my compatriot, a guy that is a big fan of mine, my buddy Scott Hamilton down there in South Carolina. Hi, Scott.
I am a fan. I am just, I've told this story and I'm going to tell it on Backspin Golf. I remember the day I met you.
Oh boy.
You were working for another university.
Yeah.
That we shall not name.
Correct.
Because of your audience. Your audience.
Good job.
And you say, hi, I'm Matthew Lawrence. I go, hey, you know, I'm Scott Hamilton, blah, blah, blah. And I look at you and I go, let me tell you, man, you were on a really good show called Duet. And that's when we connected because I was in junior high watching that show. I watched it.
Wow.
Whenever it came out, I named Chris Lemon and Allison LaPlanca. And I said, man, that's a good show. And then we bonded and then you lamented how it got hosed by Fox and yada, yada.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't realize that was when we first met.
Very first thing I said to you was like, hey, I'm Scott. You were on Duet. I didn't say Annie and the Cruisers. I didn't say St. Elmo's Fire. Your 39 episodes on Beverly Hills 90210.
Oh boy. I prefer to say 9 years. That sounds better. Anyway, and here's the thing. This is how you tie into Backspin Golf with all this. Almost everything in my life, because of both my acting, but more importantly, my golf, everything in my life was affected by it once I started playing golf in 1981.
That's how you got the job at the other university.
Everything. My kids, I met my family was because of the Lexington Children's Charity Golf Classic, all of it. It's all been influenced by golf. Also, my other job. That's why I was there for you to meet me, because I was playing. I met a basketball coach at the Jimmy V golf tournament. So anyway, all right.
The biggest story I ever broke was because I was playing golf with an agent. And he casually dropped it. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And it was when Tiger Woods signed with Gatorade. And I had it 6 weeks before everybody. And I tracked it down and talked to the people at he had negotiated with Vitamin Water and this and that. And that Gatorade was coming out with this line of products. And it was because I was playing golf. More has happened on a golf course. More wars have probably been caused and ceased during rounds of golf.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of kind of the politics of golf, as you just did, I want to get your thoughts on the whole Live Golf, Brian Rolapp, all of it, because you always have great takes on these kinds of things. So let's just start with, earlier today, I read, and it came out today, there was a great column. It's actually an article in The New Yorker by Zach Helfand about Live Golf and the demise of Live Golf. And it's very long, but it's pretty amazing to read. So let's just get your thoughts on Live Golf and where we are right now.
Well, it was pretty ill-conceived to begin with. And we know, we know why it was born. It was born for sports watching. the Saudis looking for a way to distract from their human rights violations and atrocities. So they said, we're going to get into the world of professional sports. And they found some guys who were willing to do it. They decided that an international golf circuit was the way to go. And they had folks like Greg Norman, who had been kicking around the World Golf Tour and this, that, and the other for decades, willing to jump at the bit. And also had guys like Phil Mickelson, who were bemoaning the just horrible treatment they were getting from the PGA Tour.
Incredible, yeah.
And it became born. And what's funny, though, and I hate to say this, it pains me to say this, Phil is now a martyr because everything he said came to pass. The PGA Tour now, because of LIV Golf, is better, I think, because you do have the signature events. There are more opportunities for the main guys to make money, not as many opportunities for guys to get on the tour. But the product week in and week out is better, so the players are benefiting, the tournament directors are benefiting, the networks are benefiting, and it's all because of the birth of LIV Golf. But LIV Golf, the way it was structured, LIV, Roman numerals for 54, a 54-hole event initially, then it pivoted finally to 72 holes. Shotgun starts. When I think of a shotgun start, I'm thinking I need a beer cart.
Correct.
I'm out playing with Matthew at Bel Air in the Verizon, you know, something.
Yeah.
It's just so hard. And team concepts.
And teams, right.
The team. I get teams in college just by nature of it. Okay, I get that. Match play. This ain't match play. It's still team golf, but it's not match play. And then the uniforms. And my friend Daniel Shirley, he's the editor at The Athletic. He was running their live blog during the Masters. He made the best comment. No disrespect to the people at Burger King, but he said that Sergio Garcia looked like he was working at Burger King drive-thru with his LIV golf uniform as he was marching down the fairway. It was just LIV from the beginning. Do more, do less, make more. That's the American dream, but this was never going to work out, and it always felt dirty anyhow.
That's the right way to say it. Excuse me. I have two very close friends who are with LIV Golf on the production end. One, I'm sure you know Keith Hirschland, who is a producer, and Jerry Foltz, who is a good friend and a really terrific commentator, by the way. And so it's been hard for me since LIV Golf came about to talk about it. But they know how I feel about LIV Golf and several of the players. Where do we go now? Can you catch people listening? Can you catch them up on what is going to happen? Originally, when they were in Mexico a week ago or 10 days ago, it came down to, we're not even going to play because they're not getting paid and all this stuff, stories breaking. And then it came out, the CEO of LIV Golf said that at the end of this season, it's going to be done. So catch people up on that if you would.
I think you pretty much nailed it. Yeah. I mean, there was so much miscommunication involved. It was Scott O'Neill, the CEO, at first says, no, we're good. Funding guaranteed through 2032.
Right.
And then he pivots and says, well, at the end of this year, we've got to find revenue sources. And that's like, what? Why? I thought you had funding until 2032. So they changed the messaging midstream. Here's what's lost in all this. The Saudis all this money comes from something called a public investment fund, and it has more money than you and I could ever wrap our minds around. But think about the name of that, Matthew. Public investment fund. You want to get a return on your investment.
Correct.
This thing lost more than $400 million in 2024 alone. That is mind-blowing. They've already pumped $5 billion with a B into this since it was born about 4 years ago. So they're not getting a return on their investment. And when the powers that be at the PIF, the Public Investment Fund, released their, I guess it's a prospectus is what you do when you send out what you're going to spend the money on, this, that, and the other. When they issued that about 9 months ago, I might be mistaken on the timeline, there was nothing earmarked for sports and entertainment. That should have been the first red flag, because in the previous prospectus, and I want to say this comes out every 4 years, it was earmarked on there, and that became LIV Golf.
And it's
so we
not,
should have seen it coming.
It's not only golf. This is also on behalf of the Saudis trying to make their area the a destination, which because of all the things that have gone on there and with them, it has not been the same as it is, even in places like Qatar. And Saudi Arabia is still not what they want. And they just sold 70%, this is another red flag, 70% of their soccer team, the biggest soccer team that Ronaldo played for, they sold 70% of their ownership in that. They're just cutting back on all of it. And so here's the question, and then we'll get to something a little brighter. What happens now with the guys playing on the LIV Golf Tour? We know that there's the reinstatement rule with, you know, Rahm and the cheater and DeShamu and, you know, some of those other guys. What about the rest of them?
Well, now don't forget the one that would have applied to Rahm and DeChambeau and Cam Smith, that expired. Mm-hmm. They had a 3-week window to accept that offer from Brian Rolapp, then the he's the new CEO of the PGA Tour. And Jay Monahan he's still commissioner when it happened. They had a 3-week window to accept that a few months ago. And that's when Brooks Koepka came aboard with stipulations. Mm-hmm. You had to qualify for this. You had to do that.
Right.
He who shall not be named, the cheater.
Yes, the cheater.
He, because he missed that window, or maybe it didn't apply to him actually because his major was before 2021 or 2019 maybe. He had to serve what is essentially a 1-year suspension. So he's able to play on the PGA Tour starting in August. Mm-hmm. He's able to play in the Masters because he's a past champion. But right now he's playing DP World Tour. I want to say he's like leading points guy on the DP World Tour right now.
And the top 10 on that with those get PGA Tour status.
Correct.
So
correct. Which he'll have in some form or fashion anyhow.
Right.
Because of his DP World Tour current status. But to your point, the other guys, I think they'll open that window back up so that a John Rahm and a DeChambeau can come in. And as far as the rank and file dudes, the gooches of the world, I don't know. I don't know. I think it could be pretty arduous for those guys. They might have to pay some stiff financial penalties.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, or perhaps do the one year suspension
on the Corn Ferry.
How great would that be for that tournament?
It'd be unbelievable.
Yep. It'd be fantastic. But the problem is, Matthew, that takes spots away from other dudes
Correct.
Who are trying to make it. So it's really a catch-22. I do know this. It is absolutely incredible to think that we are here in 2026 and the PGA Tour, let's go ahead and say PGA Tour won. PGA Tour won.
Mm-hmm.
And if we go back to June of 2023, I remember getting the news alert that there had been a hastily put together press conference between the PGA Tour, LIV Golf, and representatives of the public investment fund saying we are talking about the framework for a merger.
Right.
And I got a text message from a woman named Terry Strada. Her husband was killed in 9/11. He was in one of the Twin Towers. Mm. She has led numerous lawsuits and other initiatives against the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, and she was beside herself. She felt absolutely betrayed. How could the PGA Tour do this? Why would they do this? This is so insulting.
Mm-hmm.
But the PGA Tour at that time had no choice because basically it was getting strangled in litigation because it had a finite amount of money. Saudis didn't.
Right.
And for it to be the way it is right now, for the PGA Tour to have won, to have pivoted as hard as it did to its current model, A, speaks to the fortitude of the tour, B, to the star power of the guys who made it happen, Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy, and C, to the foresight of Jay Monahan, then the commissioner of the tour. It's absolutely astounding. It's one of the greatest stories in sports if you're looking at it through the lenses of the PGA Tour or the other side of LIV.
Right. Very well said.
Thank you.
All right. Let's, in the few minutes we have left, let's go to the actual golf that's being played now.
Do we have to?
Yes, we have to.
Because I...
Hold on. We just had Harbor Town.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's really great.
I love it.
I know you've played there.
Many times. Love it.
Me too. Many times. But my favorite thing about it, the tournament was great. I actually watched some golf in this tournament, which I haven't been doing. I love Matt Fitzpatrick. I just love the guy. They're chanting USA, USA, and all kinds of things at him, which is par for the course. But his reaction was so great. I just love that guy. I really do.
He went up a few notches in my book because something about him just turns me off. But after seeing how he responded, first of all, on the course, he responded like a champion, obviously, won the tournament for a second time. But he was like, it's good. They're engaged. They're into the event.
Yeah.
There's nothing. And he equated it to football/soccer. Mm-hmm. In his over in Europe, and I said, you know what, I dig it. As long as it's not the shenanigans and the absolute mockery of the sport that it became at Bethpage during the Ryder Cup,
right?
I'm cool with it,
right?
And I also like that he had such deep ties to Hilton Head, to Harbortown, having come there many times growing up. He's got the head cover of the lighthouse. He has an affinity for the course because it's my belief, and I truly do believe this. There is no other tournament on the PGA Tour, sans the Masters,
right,
that is as connected with its community as the Heritage. The tournament has grown as Hilton Head has grown, and Hilton Head has grown as the Heritage has grown. They're one in the same.
1,000%.
And for him to have, for him to have that connection, those deep roots with that community, they will celebrate him forever. They want past champions they can celebrate, and he's the perfect example.
I'm going to tell you a really quick story about one of my times playing at Hilton Head. As I said, we had the Hilton Head Celebrity Golf Tournament for years. We all went down there and had the best time in the world. Well, at that tournament, a few years before this, I met a guy named PJ Carlissimo, who many people know as he's now, doing telecasts of the NBA. But he was a coach at Seton Hall, the Golden State Warriors. Anyway, and PJ and I got to be very friendly. And we went back one year and we were playing, and PJ is the worst golfer you've ever seen. Well, top five. And he will play 100 holes in a day. You have to drag him off the golf course. So we played in the tournament, and we had a black tie dinner that night. And if you know anything about Hilton Head Island, there is one road that goes down the middle of the island, two lanes going each way. That's it. And we were staying at, I think, the Westin at the hotel. And the golf course was about 2.5-3 miles away from the hotel. We finished our round at about 3 o'clock in the tournament. And I'm getting ready to go back to the hotel, and PJ comes up to me and goes, let's go. I said, what? He said, come on, we're not done. Let's go play some more. So like an idiot, I got in the cart with PJ, and we went back out. And at about 5 o'clock, the dinner started at 6. Oh. At 5 o'clock, I said to PJ, we got to go. All right? It's black tie. We got to go. We went, took the cart, and went back to the pro shop, and everyone was gone. Everyone. Oh. He said, we'll call the hotel. They'll send somebody to pick us up. We called the hotel. Sorry, we don't have any cars available. PJ says, wait here. He goes around the back and he comes back with one of those groundskeeper's little golf carts with the flat bed for rakes on the back. I said, what are you doing? Come on, we'll go back to the hotel. I said, you're stealing this to go back to? Just so we put our golf bags on the flatbed on the back. We drove down the road going 8 miles an hour, people honking at us, drove it all the way back to the hotel, pulled up where the valet guy was, and PJ takes a $20 bill and the keys to this little groundskeeper's cart and hands them to the valet kid and says, can you take this back to the golf course with us? And the kid said, yeah, of course. That's what I have so many memories of Hilton Head that are like that. I'll tell them to you some other time.
That's a winner.
I can't talk about. Oh, it's the greatest. Anyway, all right. I think that's it for now.
Okay,
we will
bye.
Talk to you very soon. Thank you for your clarification of what's going on.
And I did my best.
I'm telling you now, this edition of Backspin, I'm done talking about Liv because I've done it for the last couple of weeks. But it keeps coming up. This is the main story right now in golf. So thank you.
The next development, and then we'll go, is keep an eye on DeChambeau because his contract's up at the end of this year, and it's my understanding he's already looking for a pathway. What's his next step? And once he leaves, it collapses because he's, as much as you and I are annoyed by him, he's the biggest star.
I'm not annoyed by him.
I am 100%.
I can't stand him. I just want him gone. I love watching Hilton Head and not seeing him there. Okay, that's it. Thanks, Scotty boy.
Hit him straight.
Okay, see ya.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence.
Welcome back. Backspin Golf on ESPN 92.5 and 1300 AM. And joining me now for his always interesting takes on the world of golf is my friend Dan Houser from down there in Florida. Hello, Dan Houser.
Hello, hello. What's happening?
Oh, you know, not too much. has there ever been a time, you and I have been speaking on Backspin Golf for a long time, has there ever been a time when nothing was going on?
Not when we've spoken. There's plenty of time going on, but then we're not talking because we got nothing to talk about.
yeah, that's a good point. All right. Valid. We have several things to discuss, as always, today. And here's where I want to start with you. I would like to start with the fact that how long will it be before there are, I don't know, three events on the PGA Tour besides the majors? How many are going to drop out? Because let's start, if people haven't heard this. There is a location in the Pacific Ocean that for many years has been a very important part of the PGA Tour. And I'm speaking about the lovely islands of Hawaii, that there are no longer going to be tournaments played in Hawaii. So let's start there. Why is that happening and what more is coming?
Yeah, I mean, if Brian Rolopp truly wants to make the tour schedule kind of line up with the off season of the NFL schedule so they no longer have any sort of overlapping, so you would see the season start essentially right after the Super Bowl, or, you know, I don't know, maybe I think what would probably make a lot of sense is you start the PGA Tour season in Phoenix the week of the Super Bowl, because that seems to, regardless of, I mean, the Super Bowl is there enough that you get that perfect, you know, kind of series of events. But even when it's not there, they draw well enough, even Super Bowl weekend, that I think that that would probably be the start. And then you would wrap it up kind of how you have it now, where the tour championship kind of, like, you know, wraps up right around the, I know it overlaps by maybe about a week or two, but, you know, it essentially wraps up right before the you know, the meat of football season gets underway. So obviously, if you do that and you truncate that schedule, there's only certain number, you only have a certain number of weeks that you can plug in tournaments, and four of those weeks are already taken by the majors. So I don't know off the top of my head. I don't know what the math is on that. I don't know how many weeks you have from, you know, the start of, or from that first, you know, that beginning of February through, let's just say the start of September, but however many you've got minus four, because you have the four majors. So there's only so much room on the schedule to then have tournaments. And then on top of that, you have the signature events where all the top guys basically have to play in, unless, you know, you, unless you're Rory and you win the Masters, and then you kind of get the week off the next week, and you kind of get the okay to not show up at Hilton Head, but for the most part. So then when you factor those in, you really only have what?
However, six, seven,
8 weeks of quote unquote regular tournament availability. So I think this is only the start. Obviously the Hawaii swing was the first one to go. I think that you will start to see more and more of these tournaments start to fall off, whether they just fall off kind of naturally on their own because sponsors don't want to keep ponying up $10+ million for, you know, the
fields that
guys
aren't
that nobody's
great.
Really watching, right. Or if the tour just says, hey, your guy, you're out, you know, as much as it pains me to say it, it would not shock me if at some point the Florida swing got a little truncated, because right now you've got both Bay Hill and the Players at which are signature events. You are going to now have this Doral tournament, which I'm sure will end up, you know, I don't know where its place is going to be. But so I just don't know if the current model or the way the model's going, I just can't see a world where you can have five tournaments in the state of Florida.
Right.
Multiples of them being signature events and still be able to get the draw for the non-ones to justify it. And once again, I say this to somebody who lives in Florida who has covered the Florida swing for how long have we been talking now? How many years?
A long time.
Yeah. So, you know, I I'm not saying this to somebody who has insider information is saying it's definitely going to happen, but if Hawaii can't hold up, I just, you know, you wonder what other of these tournaments that have kind of been staples for forever may just slowly start to kind of disappear.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense. And you mentioned to me, like, the Honda. I mean, these are events that have been around for a very long time. And the part of it that I think is the most disturbing is so much of what's done with PGA tournaments have to do with charity and the communities that they're held in. And so those will be the most affected by these.
But you have to wonder how much of that still is in effect, too, with the fact that now the PGA Tour has their for-profit entity.
Yeah.
You know, I'm no tax attorney. I'm no, you know, lawyer. Uh-huh. I don't know how it's divided up and written out, but you are 100% right. But I even you even have to wonder how much of that is still happening even now with the for-profit entity and how it's all being run.
Right. All right. Well, you mentioned a name, so let's go there. Brian Rolapp, who is, I think, in a lot of ways, the perfect guy to be running the tour now because of his relationship, his prior relationship with the NFL, and we all know how that has grown. It's, you know, the most obvious statement in the world. And so he has a real knowledge of how to grow the tour, which almost seems ridiculous to say. But do you have thoughts about Brian Rolapp and what he's doing?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think you said it yourself, he appears to be doing a great job so far. But I will say, and this is not a knock on Brian Rolapp, obviously, but when you're following up, you know, somebody like a Jay Monahan, there's really, if you can't do a better job than Jay Monahan, then you shouldn't be running things in the first place. So the bar was not exactly set very high for him to succeed. He basically just had to come in and not run the tour out of business to essentially succeed from the start. Obviously, I think that what he has done with understanding and knowing that, you know, whatever your feelings of Liv are and whatever your feelings are of some of the guys that went to Liv, at the end of the day, you know, you have guys who are fan favorites who will still draw eyeballs, who, despite their status and what they did by going to Liv, fans will not forgive maybe, or they just won't care anymore, or they didn't care in the first place. And so by allowing, you know, Brooks to come back the way he did, and he offered it up to many others who didn't accept it, but to provide a pathway even for somebody like Patrick Reed to play his way back, I think that it's understanding that, hey, listen, I'm not perfect, you're not perfect, the world's not perfect, but, you know, things happen and things can change and we can move on and landscapes change, and, you know, let's just whatever we need to do to put the best product out there for the fans and on TV, you know, mm-hmm. let's just do it. And so I think that has been something good he's definitely done. You know, and obviously, like you mentioned, he has an NFL background. Obviously, the NFL is the most successful. Yeah, well, obviously, it's the most successful professional sports league in the country. You could argue it's the most successful business, period, in mm-hmm. the world.
Yeah.
And so, you know, obviously somebody with a wealth of knowledge with that background, it can't hurt to go anywhere to do anything, at that point, especially with running another professional sports league.
All right. I must be mellowing in my old age, because I just heard you say a name and I didn't stop you. I slipped it in there on you. You did. But don't think for a second I didn't notice. And henceforth, which is a word that I should use more often, he will be known as the cheater. Period.
I did even pause for a second to wait for you to correct me, and you didn't. Yeah. So I just kept going.
See? Okay. Now, let's speak a little about, and Scott Hamilton, who was on the show earlier, we spoke about Liv, as I've done for the last two or three weeks since we came back from the hiatus. This is the last week, unless there's another bombshell, that I will be talking about Liv at all. But I'll allow it today because I haven't spoken about it with you. Just give me your thoughts on the whole Liv thing and what they're going to do. And now guys are going to go play on the DP World Tour. And if you're in the top 10, like somebody we know, you'll get PGA privileges. Just talk to me about that for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, it's dead. You know, the fact that not a single person with any sort of Liv prowess would want 100% come out and say, no, we are still good to go. Mm-hmm. Kind of shows that it's dead, you know.
Except Scott O'Neill. Yeah.
Yeah, but even he wouldn't confirm that it's going to continue after this
right.
year.
He came
All he
back
said is
later.
That we're funded through the end of the year.
Right, right.
So yeah, it's dead after the year. They have enough money for the year. They're going to go out and say that we're going to try to raise money and find people that will continue to be investors in it. I'm sorry, I don't know about you. I can't speak for you or anyone listening to this, but I would be hard pressed to find somebody who's willing to put money into something that has proven from day one that it is a money loser and there's mm-hmm. no opportunity for financial growth in it. People that have the type of money that Liv needs to invest don't tend to invest in products that have already proven that they are cooked. Now, it's one mm-hmm. thing if they had been investors on day one and said, hey, let's give it a try. But nobody's going to come in now and say, oh, yeah, let me give you $5 billion. Just keep running this thing into the ground. So,
right, right.
It's dead. So the question now becomes, obviously, which of these guys will now go that DP Tour route? Will somebody like a John Rahm and a I'll say his name real quick, but we'll see if I get it away with it. Bryson
DeChambeau.
Or a yeah. Cam Smith, will any of them be re-granted the eligibility that Brooks was given? Obviously, they were all given though that same option as well with the same deadline, and they all chose to not accept it. Mm-hmm. Will they now be given that option again, or will they also have to go and basically go the Other name that I won't re-mention again, Root, and play their way back on the tour through the DP World Tour. So I think that's going to be the biggest question that's going to come out. Or, you know, does Bryson just say, I'm done with it all and just go become a YouTube star? You know, I mean, does he just become one of these YouTube golf guys permanently? So I think there's a lot of questions out there about what these guys do, where these guys go. I don't think we need to wonder about the Ian Poulters of the world, because they'll just, this already was their retirement tour, so they will just now, you know, go ahead and retire. I can't see them sticking around and going back to the Champions Tour, but, you know, I guess you never truly know. But I don't think those are the names that people are as concerned about.
Right.
There's really only about, unfortunately, and I say unfortunately because Liv scooped up a lot of these younger kids straight out of college who unfortunately never got to make a name for themselves, and they may not ever now, but realistically, there's maybe, you know, three or four names that I think anyone truly still cares about. It's Rom. It's the two names that I won't mention.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly Dustin Johnson, although I feel like nobody, like, he just doesn't really care anymore. So
he's,
I don't know if
he's kind of disappeared.
Really,
yeah.
And then, you know, maybe Cam Smith, but I would have said 3 years ago people cared a lot more about Cam Smith than they do now. Nobody really even talks about him much anymore.
Right.
So I'm not even sure if he's still at that level of we have to have him back anymore.
Mm-hmm. Although I think he's a great player, and he would be, you know, I can't say I'd watch him, but I don't have strong feelings about him the way I do some of the other guys.
No, but I just meant, unfortunately, the juice has kind of cooled off on him for the last few years too, because on top of the fact that we only see him at the majors, he's also not really winning on Live too. So like you get the Roms and all these other guys who, whether you're watching week in or week out, if you know, you see it at least on social media, so that the names continue to stay out there in some capacity, but like, you really don't see Cam Smith's name other than during the majors really even mentioned much in week in and week out, just kind of, you know, online activity anymore, if you will.
Right. And by the way, you mentioned DeChamou, which that's the name I'll use. He's talking about $500 million to do his own YouTube thing and all that kind of stuff. I'll say it again. I, for one, am very glad that I don't have to watch him every week in the times that I'm even watching the PGA Tour now. I'll tune in for a little while here and there on a Saturday or a Sunday, but I don't even feel the need now. I keep saying this, I'd much rather watch the LPGA than the PGA Tour right now. And some of it has to do with, I should say, a lot of it has to do with the actual broadcasts of the PGA Tour. Between the production and the commentary, which I don't listen to anyway. Well, you get the idea.
Announcers, we know that you always have it on full blast as loud as you can throughout the house so you can hear everything they have to say. We already know that.
Yeah, right. No matter where I am, even down the block, I can't miss a word of showing me a putt that comes up 3 feet short and having an expert say to me, and it comes up just short. That's the part that I love the most. You idiots. That's what I love the most.
We all know that. We know that's your favorite part of the whole broadcast.
All right. Let's talk for just a minute about this season so far. Obviously, the Masters, I'm pretty sure were you happy that Rory won again?
Yeah, it was nice to see. My wallet wasn't thrilled with it, but you know, other than that, I mean, it was a nice story to see. Obviously, I thought it would have been really cool to see Justin Rose finally win, especially since he was so close last year and then so close again this year. You know, I also had, I guess you could say, took a flyer of sorts on Shane Lowry, because I thought that would once again, just another great guy who you'd love to see finally win it. But I guess, you know, if neither of them could win it and Scotty wasn't going to win it, obviously, you know, Rory was a great story from the standpoint of his entire career. Augusta was the one demon he could never get by. And so to see him then finally get it over that hump last year, and then apparently it just opened the floodgates, and now I guess he's just never going to lose another Masters
Well,
again the rest of his life. But
that's what Fred Couples said. He said Rory might win every one from here
So
on out.
I think that is a cool story if you think about, just kind of everything that has happened to him in his career at that golf course, and now he's now won it 2 years in a row. So obviously, Rory has been one of those guys that has never faltered, has never wavered, obviously. And so, yeah, it was nice for him to see him win it again. Sure, of course.
I was just making sure, and before I let you go, quickly on the rest of the tour, anything that is, I hate this phrase, but I'll say it anyway, catching your fancy in terms of how the season's going so far?
It's this is going to sound weird, but maybe not so much after you just kind of mentioned that you're, watching of other golf lately. I feel like that so far the season has been quiet, and I know that may sound weird to say, but I feel like we final round on Sunday where he blew it and then got it back, and then Justin Rose, that was all appointment must-see TV. But I feel like other than that, we just haven't had that, quote unquote moment yet this season. And that's not to knock on any tournaments that we've had. We've had some great winners. Obviously, Cam Young at the Players was a great tournament. So I'm not saying these weren't great tournaments, but I feel like we haven't had that holy bleep moment yet. And so it's now it's kind of like, well, when's that one coming?
That makes sense. All right. Well, it's always great catching up with you, as you know, and I will be requesting your presence on Backspin Golf again very soon, Danny boy.
Always, always. For all you know, we could be talking next week about how LIV is officially shut down, and then you'll talk about them again. You never know. Things seem to be happening by the minute with them.
If that happens, you'll be the first call I make.
Deal, deal.
Okay.
All
Thanks, pal.
right, good talking to you.
See ya. You
All right.
too. All right. That'll do it for this edition of Backspin Golf. Thanks to Scott Hamilton and Dan Houser for sharing some time with me. Thanks also to my incredible partners on Backspin Golf, the Woodford Club and Kentucky Golf Trail. Check both of them out, thewoodfordclub.com and kygolftrail.com. The things that are going on, if you're a golfer, are amazing with both of them. I want to quickly mention something about the Woodford Club. Aside from what a great semi-private club it is and a great golf course, my son, Everett, got engaged last week. And we called Bob Baldessari at the Woodford Club and asked him if we could have a little get together on that night of the engagement. And there were about 40 or 45 people that came, and they did an incredible job. Cheryl, Lauren, everybody connected with the Woodford Club. And of course, Bob. It was an event. I don't think I've ever seen my son Everett as happy as he was that not only they pulled off a surprise party for his fiance, Ava, but how beautiful and just amazing the whole night was. So, aside for the thanks for being my partner on Backspin Golf, thanks for making that night so memorable for all of us. It's just an incredible place. All right, that'll do it. We'll be back next Sunday. Have a great rest of your day. It's ESPN 92.5 and 1300 AM.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence.